Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and came to fame because of his coverage of the 1967 Detroit riots. His frequent sparring matches with Coleman Young were the stuff of local legend, and he changed the face of newscasting forever. In the early 80s, at the peak of his career, his 11 p.m. newscasts captured 50% of the news audience. His anchoring and commentaries have won more Emmys than any other anchor in American history. His name? Bill Bonds. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with the legendary anchorman, Bill Bonds. Bill, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, it's an honor to be here, and it's a thrill. I have long believed that I should be an integral part of the Great Voice of the Great Lakes and the Golden Towers of the Fisher Building, WJR. I auditioned here about 15 times. They said, your voice hasn't changed yet, so get lost, kid. I was a pretty young blonde boy. So. Grew into a bald, but I still have hair guy. I'm very, very attractive, articulate, and my greatest burden is humility. So. But it's a lot of fun to be here, Jack. And like I said earlier, you know, if you take yourself too seriously, people eventually don't.
How are you doing? That's the first
question. I'm doing pretty well. I'm not busy enough, to be very frank. You know what happens to you when you get into radio and television? It's so much fun, and it's so consuming, because no matter where you go, you think, God, that'd make a good story. Man, I'd like to interview that guy over here. Boy, there's an attractive-looking woman who's the head of this meeting. And you start thinking in terms of, how do I take this, and what would I do with it if I had it on the air? So it doesn't leave you once it bites you. And to be idle is frustrating as hell. It really is. You miss it.
How did it first bite you? How did you first get into radio?
Started in the service. And I was a GI. I was overseas in Newfoundland. And I was doing some stuff in the NCO club, some comedy and some satire. And a guy by the name of Colonel Bond spotted me. I did a thing at the officer's club. And he said, you ought to be on the radio up here. We got a radio station. And that's how I started. And so when I got out, I matriculated at U of D, majored in poli-sci and English, and started out in Albion, Michigan, auditioned for a guy named Jim Beasley, and Ted Ebringham, who I think is a very prominent attorney in the Detroit area, was on the staff. Very, very smart, bright, articulate kid. I know he did well. And they taught me about radio. And he said, you got hired. And I did. And I was working on a master's degree, and I got hired for $1 an hour, and I probably was overpaid. But from then, it was right up to the top.
Doing research on you, you were raised in the city's 12th Street. You left one high school by mutual consent. You were kicked out of another, and you dropped out of a third. You eventually joined the Air Force and passed the high school equivalency test. You were a rebel. What would you say to young rebels?
I was a creative, articulate, bright light that they kept trying to put a bushel over. In other words, I was kind of bored in school, and my mom was a very well-educated young woman, as was my dad. They taught my brother and I how to read, I think, by the time we were 3 or 4 years old. And I can remember getting the Times, the Free Press, and the News at our house every day and getting down on the floor with your elbows propped up. And that's how we learned to do arithmetic, because we tried to figure out batting averages by the Tigers. So we were readers from the get-go. And my older brother was a very, very gifted guy. He was kind of my Google. He was a year and a half ahead of me, and he knew everything and remembered everything. And when I didn't feel like doing the work, I said, Dick, how do you do this? And he'd do it for me. I said, man, you're great. You're terrific. Well, he said, fine. So I learned as much from my brother as I probably learned from any teacher until I got into college.
What advice would you give to a young, creative, very educated, bored kid in school today?
First thing you better find out is if you're an alcoholic. because it's an insidious thing. It impacted my family. And if you are, you got to quit early or you'll self-destruct like I did. I mean, I drank myself out of the best job in the Western Hemisphere. And you regret it every day. But the first thing to do, I think the first thing you're going to do, if you're going to be public, you better know who you are. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, if you go public, you better know who you are and you better know what your strengths are. But maybe even more important, you better know what your weakness is.
1964, you get hired by Channel 7, XYZ. How did that happen?
I auditioned 7 times. And finally, a guy saw it and said, his name was Bill Fife, now deceased. He had been at Channel 4 and came over to Channel 7 as the news director. And I used to kind of make fun of Bill because we both worked the City County building. I was with WKNR. But I auditioned at 7, probably 6 or 7 times. And I auditioned a final time, and he saw it and said, "That's the best audition I've ever seen." And what had happened is I went in and they said, "Give us about a half hour, 20 minutes worth of news." So I got some wire copy, took a look at it, and I did a little sports and a little weather, and then I did a little commentary at the end. And I did it into the camera. I had a pretty good memory back then. And they all thought I had a teleprompter, and I didn't. And it was just, television was so easy for me. It's unbelievable. I never paid attention to the equipment. And I don't think that television is mass media. I think it's one-on-one. "Good evening. Come George with news on a Tuesday." I mean, you do that on television, people say, "What's wrong with this guy? You know, a good evening to you, ladies and gentlemen. I have news." You got to come on and say, "Stroza's leaving town. The family is sold out. You all know that I like to take a pop every once in a while for Billy Bonds. Make mine a Bud." Well, that got nominated for an Emmy. But if you can't write the way people talk, I don't think it works on radio and television. I think you got to be able to write and talk the way people talk in order to get them to listen.
We're talking to Bill Bonds. When we come back, we'll ask him about the 67 riots that changed all our lives.
Did that make any sense?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Bill Bonds, who came to fame because of his coverage of the 1967 Detroit riots.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with us your memories, your thoughts about those riots?
Well, one thing that I think probably most people listening right now don't know is that 67 was not my first riot in Detroit. 1943 was. So in 1943, Woodward was the great line of demarcation. Believe me, if the sun went down in the city of Detroit and you were an adult or big teenage black man, you got arrested and beat up by the cops. You were not supposed to be on the west side of Woodward. Okay, that's when they had Black Bottom. So it kind of begs the question, but is Detroit two separate and unequal cities? And has it been for quite some time? And my answer to that is yes. The Detroit that rioted was a Detroit where blacks for years and years and decades had been ignored and discriminated against. That was in 43. What was it in 67? I think it was just ready to burst. The unemployment was high. The crime was high. The lack of hope was, I think, endemic in the black community. And the cops raided a whorehouse and a blind peg that they knew had been operating for years. I mean, if the cops, you think the cops don't know where the blind pegs and the whorehouses are? Come on. The sun comes up. Where?
In the east.
Every day. And the whorehouses and the drug houses are here every day. And the cops get paid to let them stay open. Everybody knows. Why raid it? Why was that done? 3 o'clock in the morning, 12th Street and what? What was it? Atkinson, something like that. I used to work there at Boweski's. Okay. When it was just all Jewish. And the Jewish people moved up, the blacks started moving in. And some guy throws a bottle. Some black guy gets mad at a cop who probably was pushing him around. And it happened. And then for, a day, the city administration didn't tell us the truth. Didn't admit that there was something going on. And so when nobody admitted it, it just kept going. But it was waiting to happen. It was a keg of dynamite that finally exploded. And the spark was a dumb raid. Would it have happened eventually? Yeah. It was just waiting to happen. What happened to the city at that point? It finally had to come to the realization with, man, oh man, we got one hell of a problem here. And nobody really has a quick solution, because there isn't a quick solution. America is still dealing with the race problem. The question of race. Who's to blame? Who's been in charge? Who's been in charge? I was at a table the other day with some people I know and some people I didn't know, and one of the white guys said, who's going to start representing me? I said, well, has anybody ever discriminated against you because you're white? And the answer was, well, what the hell's that got to do with anything? I said, well, if you were black, it means a lot. But nobody's representing you. You got to start representing yourself. And you can't expect blacks not to vote for blacks when whites vote for whites. And whites, I mean, somebody said to me, they got no money. They're raising money for Kwame. Who's they? The black people who feel that he represents them, good or bad. Who else is there? And could a white person run for mayor in the city of Detroit and have a chance of winning? I don't think so. Could a black man run for mayor of Bloomfield Hills? I don't know.
What's the biggest thing, Bill Bonds, you learned in being an anchor in Detroit for 25-plus years?
People listen if you're listening. If you've done your homework and you know who is going to be interviewed and you got a great team of reporters, men and women who love what they do and are turned loose, you can get some pretty good journalism on the air. And I think the thing to do is, good evening, we got a hell of a story here, and frankly, it's going to be tough to explain to you. But here's what happened as far as we can tell. You say that to people, and they can say, wait, what's going on here? Because people don't do that anymore. People don't talk you're not talking to a mass audience. You're talking to a husband and a wife, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, maybe a guy alone, maybe a woman alone. You don't come on and say, good Friday to you. Unless it's Good Friday, and then you have to say a good Friday to you, which one guy I know did. If you come on the air and you say, good evening, man, we got a terrible story to tell you about Livonia. We really don't know how it happened, but here are the results, and we're trying to find out, and boom, boom, boom. And then if you got a reporter who's on the scene, you kind of say, Jimmy, tell me what we don't know. You got anything new? If you haven't, let's move on. I think if you're that honest, people say, I kind of like that. And is it a hell of a lot easier to be honest than it is to lie?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And I know about both.
Yes. Bill, you're a walking history book for Detroit and Michigan. How do we get a can-do attitude back into the state?
I heard a line the other day that kind of hurt me, and not personally, but as a son of Michigan. And the line was something like, this Kwame thing, it's not just about Kwame. This is about not just the city of Detroit. This is about the state of Michigan. And Detroit is a cancer. And I didn't know what to reply to that. Because this is bigger than Kwame. And it is bigger than Detroit. It's about the state of Michigan. And I see young Cindy here who went to the University of Michigan Dearborn as one of your assistants and participates on a regular basis down here. A lot of people her age with college educations have already left. Now, if we lose them, who's left? And we got to start thinking about that. Well, we got to rebuild the schools. Schools are not successful if the children attending the schools don't have parents who raise a little hell about what their kids are doing and the kind of grades they're making. I mean, I was, kind of a rebellious kid, but you really couldn't con the nuns. You either did your homework and you knew it or you didn't. And if you were a guy that was kind of wild, I came from an alcoholic family. There was a lot of anger in my family, and there were a lot of years where this little kid woke up mad because he heard his mom and dad just beating one another up verbally and emotionally. And you go to school, who are you going to take it out on? You ain't going to take it out on Monsignor Babcock. You're going to try and con Sister Estelle or raise a little hell in the class. And when you think about yourself, if you can look at yourself back then and say, holy smokes, what's it like to be that little boy now or that little girl now who just happens to be black, who lives in a neighborhood where crime is everywhere and drugs are everywhere and kids are dropping out of school 7 out of 10 or whatever the rate is. By the time they're what? In puberty, they're looking for affection. They're looking for something better. And what if it isn't there? And what if all the white kids have already graduated from Birmingham or Royal Oak or whatever, and they're off to college, and their older brothers and sisters are off to college, and they're off to California, or they're off to Florida, or they're off to Arizona, or they're off to New York or Chicago. We're losing the winners, and the kids left behind are, I don't know, kind of predestined to what, failure? I don't know. Has anybody, have you heard anybody who really says, here's what we've got to do? I mean, I heard a guy named McDonald on the air in WJR the other day, and he says the key is education. What do you mean, education? How do you educate if you don't have parents? Teachers are supposed to raise our kids. I think that's a fallacy. I haven't heard anybody who's got a solution. What is the solution for Detroit? Have you heard anybody who makes sense? Well, I mean, is there some Christ-like figure on the horizon who can say, here's what we have to do and here's the way to do it? Where would you start? The first thing I'd do if I were mayor, I think I'd say, I want to talk to you. And, hi, I'm the new mayor of Detroit. You know what? I need your help. And I don't mean just, we need some help here. We all got to get involved. And then somebody said, involved in what? You want us to be policemen? You want us to be firemen? You want us to open up manufacturing plants? Hell, the Ford Motor Company can't figure out what it's doing. GM's having a tough time. Chrysler's having a tough time. Those three companies are not the companies that I grew up with. They're the companies you grew up with. Didn't Ford just sell two of its divisions that it paid twice what it just sold them for? And that was with real dollars. What does the president of Ford get? I don't know, $20 million a year? That's not bad. You say the average white guy or black guy, hey, how'd you like to be head of the Ford Motor Company and rake in $20 million? Or GM or Ford. And I don't mean to pick on it, but it isn't just happening in Detroit. It seems to me that somehow Detroit is an American story. I mean, we haven't got some special disease here, have we, that isolates us from the rest of America? I heard the other day a poll that said that the American people believe that Obama's the one who can unite us, number one. In second place is McCain, and Hillary's third. And my question is, unite us to what? Where do I go to unite with everybody? How? I got enough problems of my own. I think that's, we say these things, well, we need the candidate who's going to unite us. How? You got any ideas, Jack?
No, sir.
See, if you said that on television, you might get a response. You might get people, you know what, I heard this guy on television say the other night, well, they says, you know what, they're talking about a candidate who can unite us. Unite us to what? Support the Tigers? Well, I can't afford to go to a Tiger game. I can't afford to go to a Piston game. I can't take my kids to a Piston game. I can't buy a new car. I don't have any health insurance. Unite me.
We're talking to Bill Bonds, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
And I'm the optimist.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to the man whose commentaries and anchoring have won more Emmys than any other anchor in our history, Bill Bonds. Bill, if you were in an elevator for 1 minute with Kwame, what would you tell him?
I think the first thing I'd say, you know, Kwame, you and I have something in common. And he would say, what's that? And I said, we both have great talents for self-destruction. And I would pause to see what the reaction was. And I said, I'll tell you what I did. I drank myself out of the greatest job, maybe in the history of America, okay? You know what you've done with your arrogance and your ego? You've just screwed yourself out of a great job and a great opportunity. Not too many bright guys like you come along that often, and you've blown it. And you got nobody to blame except yourself. And you've not only let yourself down, you let a whole city down, and maybe a whole state. And if you don't come to grips with that, you're done. You're toast. You may beat the rap, but you're never going to beat the reality. You got to get a handle on your self-destruction or it's going to work. I got a handle on it, but it was too late for me to save the job that I loved and still do. But don't start blaming Whitey. Don't start blaming your political appointments. Don't start blaming the black people who loved you and now are mad at you. Blame yourself. I mean, you know, Kwame, there's nothing new about a fast zipper. And nobody really cares about you, and at least I don't. You know, I can name a lot of presidents who've done the same thing. But they were maybe a little bit more discreet about it. But that's your problem. But you don't start lying under oath and then end up costing a city that's in deep, deep trouble $9 million. And then claim to be a victim. That ain't gonna fly, baby. As big and as handsome and as tough and as smart as you are, nobody's that big, nobody's that smart, and nobody is quite that blind to their own problems. I'm not lecturing you, I'm just telling you that you're cooking your own destruction.
Speaking of legendary mayors, Coleman Young, you had a love-hate with this guy. When did you first meet him?
Oh, I met him when I was a street reporter for WKNR, and he was Keener Radio. We were rocking and rolling, and he was the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat from Detroit. And very dapper guy, very handsome guy. And I'm sure that he and my dad used to drink together every once in a while. He used to tell me, that. He said, I can't believe that your dad and my dad didn't get together. I said, why do you say that? He said, well, I understand a few things about your dad. And I said, do you? He said, yeah. He said, I understand my dad. I said, I used to have to catch my dad before he spent that paycheck on Friday, or he'd come home broke. So we started out competitive, but a lot of respect for one another. And it was a little bit like Howard Cosell and
Muhammad Ali.
He said, Billy, they love us. I got damn Billy Bond. Will Billy. You know. And we'd end up at the Coney Island at 2:30 in the morning and got to be good friends. And was he controversial? Was he a little corrupt? Probably. But you know what? Dick Daley, I think, is a case study for every American big city mayor. Pragmatic, responsible corruption works. But you got to be pragmatic. You got to be responsible. The corruption helps you get things done that need to be done. And if some group comes to you and says, here's $1 million, but here's what we need in our neighborhood, you better get it there. You know what the important thing is? What do you think the most necessary thing is for a great free society to stay free? The truth. You show me a great society that's free, that doesn't get the truth, it's going down. And I think that the truth, sometimes you have to demand it. But without the truth, You don't know what's going on. Not only do you not know what's going on in the Pentagon and the White House and the U.S. Senate, you don't know what's going on in Lansing. You don't know what's going on at City Hall. You better start finding out what's going on at the delegate level. And I'll ask anybody listening, when was the last time you, liberal or conservative, independent, Republican or Democrat, actually attended the delegate meeting in your congressional district? And who is that district? Who is that representative? I've never met anybody who's ever done it. You know, if you're saying to people, you know, get out the vote, how hypocritical is that from a Bill Bonds who's never been to a delegate meeting? Who the hell am I to tell? Be sure you go out for. This is Bill Bonds for Channel 7 Extra News. Be sure you vote. Come on.
We're talking to Bill Bonds, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Bill Bonds, who in the early 80s, at the peak of his career, his 11 p.m. newscast captured 50% of the news audience. Bill, you've alluded to challenges in your life. How did you get through them, and what advice would you give to a listener tonight who's got current challenges?
Well, I think the first thing that that I didn't do was admit that I had a serious problem. And if you don't admit that there's a serious problem, it seems to me that your chances of correcting it are rather slim. The toughest thing for me was getting, I think, my ego out of the way. And as a boy growing up in an alcoholic family, the one thing that I was never going to be was a man like my father, who was very, very, very talented and very, very handsome, very articulate, great storyteller. But every time he got a little success, he went out and did a little self-destruction with the booze. And it finally killed him. And I just vowed, that's not going to be me. And it took me a long time to wake up to the fact that you're your father's son, and you better do something about it. And I don't think I would have quit drinking had I not been fired by Channel 7. So it isn't all me. I mean, eventually reality closes in. And when reality gets that close, you better have to deal with it. You got to deal with it, or you're dead. You're gone. And took a long time. I think you got to listen to yourself. And I think you got to listen to people who love you, who are telling you maybe some bad things about yourself. Nobody has a child who lies to a parent who's in trouble, unless the lie is designed to help. Nobody has best friends who really love you, that lie to you about what you're doing to yourself. So the help is there if you're willing to look at it. If you're willing to say, I can't do this anymore. You know what's interesting about that story, and it's not unique. I mean, Bill Bonds is not a unique story. He's a unique guy in many, many ways, but I'm kidding here. You understand
absolutely.
That, don't you?
Absolutely.
I don't hear the laughter that I'm accustomed to here. Anyway, there were no drugs when I was a kid. I didn't have to worry about marijuana. Cocaine, heroin, that was for Gene Krupa. It was a headline story. Gene Krupa, the greatest drummer ever, was caught smoking marijuana. And it made headlines, for God's sake. Well, can you imagine that today? The lieutenant governor, who is now the governor of New York, the other day admitted that he and his wife have both had several affairs. Okay, but that's okay. They worked it out. He did a little marijuana, and then he did a little cocaine. And then, well, can you imagine anybody saying that 25 years ago? Okay, but there's a guy who's not. What have I got to hide? It's going to come out anyway. Then there's the governor of, and the ex-governor of New Jersey, who was in love with his aide. He admits it, and his wife is standing there. Well, now it turns out that he's no longer the governor. They're divorced, and she appeared on the other day saying that it was wrong for Spitzer's wife to be standing with him. And it turns out that they had a menage a trois together. So I'm thinking, it's got to be in the water. They got to change Niagara Falls to Viagra Falls, because everybody in New Jersey and New York is going nuts about one another, and their zippers are going up and down like you can't believe. Is that happening all over America? And you say to yourself, wait a second, where does personal responsibility come in? Isn't that what we're all talking about? You're not going to get better if you don't take hold and say, wait, I own this. This is me. Isn't the other guy? Colman Young isn't responsible for Bonds' drinking any more than some guy working the streets at City Hall is responsible for what Kwame did for himself. Kwame, you did it to you. I did it to me. And here we are. Step up and, you know, admit, you know, the truth. We'll set you free. It may kick you in the wallet a little bit, but it'll set you free.
Who are the two or three most captivating characters you came in contact with through all these decades?
Well, Colman Young, for one. The guy that really had an influence on me because of his, I think, humility was George Romney. I mean, George Romney, you know, after 64, was the titular head of the Republican Party in the United States of America. And because Goldwater had been just crushed by LBJ, if I recall. And then when he's meeting all the reporters, and I think it was down at the Book Cadillac or the Statler, and I stood up and I knew Romney. I said, you know, you're the titular head of the party. That's why all the media is here, NBC, CBS, ABC. How do you differ from Lyndon Johnson on the issues? And he said, well, what issues are you talking about, Bill? I said, well, federal aid to education. Well, I mean, that's something that's got to be done. I said, well, the war. Well, you're picking all the subjects. I said, well, you pick them. And he couldn't do it. He said, you know what? You caught me flat-footed. Well, Cronkite ran that on CBS, and I was with Channel 7 Detroit. And at that point, I figured out, you know what? If I just keep this kind of thing up, Bonds is going to do okay. But Romney, in fairness to Romney, and why I'm talking about him, is that he goes to NAM. He comes back, and somebody says, you've changed your mind on the war. He said, yes, I have. Why? He said, because when I went to Vietnam, the generals brainwashed me. Oh, really? And you know what Melvin Laird, then the powerful Ohio congressman, said? Well, if the generals brainwashed Romney about Vietnam, I can tell you, the governor took a light load to the laundromat, and America laughed. And when they laugh at you in politics, you're done. You're done. But he admitted it. He accepted it. He said, I really blew it, didn't I? I said, yeah, you did.
How do you explain Rush and Oprah?
Well, Oprah, I think, is the most well-grounded human being in a tough, tough business that I ever met. I did two shows with her. She had me on her show, and she gave me two great programs just talking about her life and how she does things, and she's kind of fearless. And I think she's one person who says, if you tell the truth, you're going to be okay. And talented beyond. I mean, she just, how many Oprahs are there in the world? She's probably the most famous, powerful woman in the world. And she's a little girl from, I don't know, Mississippi or something, a little small town. We're, you know, someday we're all going to work for either Google or Oprah. That's my Bill Bonds' prediction for on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, WJR, and the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building. We're either going to all be working for Oprah or we're going to be working for Google. And Bill Bonds is going to get a brand new job on WJR or Channel 7 or Channel 4 or Channel 6, or he's going to go unemployed and people are going to forget about him.
Rush Limbaugh.
I think he plays to people's fears. I think he plays to white America. He's a very bright guy. I did two shows with him. And he's also very funny. But he's got a shtick that is incredible. I don't think he's bad for America. I think he could try a little harder to be a little bit more objective. Whatever objective is. I don't know anybody who's completely objective. I really don't. People hated Roosevelt and they loved him. And the haters, were they any less objective than the people who loved him? I don't know, it's a tough thing to figure out. But Rush, I think Rush could be a nicer person. I've seen him make fun of gays, makes fun of women, makes fun of feminists. I mean, if you're gay, you're gay. If you're a feminist, you're a feminist. If you're all three, you're all three. But he doesn't seem to pick on the white male conservative. When was the last time you heard him do that, Jack? He's on your station here.
Every day.
Every day. Why is he so popular? Because that's the way a lot of people think. And that's a problem in America. Are we going to solve it, or are we just going to say, ah, well, that's the way things are? You know, our blacks can say, I don't want to live with whites. Our whites can say, I don't want to live with blacks. I don't hear anybody saying that, but I see people living like that's what they believe. I don't want to live in a predominantly white neighborhood if I'm the only black. And I don't want to live in a predominantly black neighborhood if I'm white. How is that going to work out? Or is this what it is? Is Detroit always going to be 90% black? Is Watts always going to be 90% black in L.A.? Is Harlem always going to be 99% black in New York City? I don't know. But there are great race divisions in most of the states and in most of the cities. Is race the scar that will never go away? I hope not. You know, I don't wake up every day thinking about, my God, what are the blacks doing this morning? Or, my God, what are the whites doing this morning? I kind of wake up, try to express a little gratitude and hope that I get through the day and get something accomplished and go to bed sober and happy.
Bill Bunz, you are great for America. You're great for Detroit. And we need your voice. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you very much, Jack. You've been a great friend. And you came along for me at the right time. Believe me. I'll tell you about that one day.
Thank you. Please join next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.